and I watched her lips meet, so softly, time and again, with each breath. "I love you," I murmured. She didn't shift or open her eyes, the exhaustion taking over as she sank deeper and deeper into sleep. Standing up straight, I stepped away, but then I dropped my eyes to her back, seeing the bruises and scrapes. How did she paint her back? Did her brother help her? I doubted it. Squatting down, I leaned in closer, studying the marks on her arm and back with the little moonlight streaming in through the sheer curtains. Licking my thumb, I rubbed at the dark purple one with the red around it, but the makeup didn't rub off. I narrowed my eyes, licking my thumb again and rubbing harder. But then she whimpered, shifting away from me like it hurt. I rubbed my finger against my thumb, not feeling any grease or oil from the makeup either. I stopped and looked up at her face, studying the drop of blood coming down from her eyebrow she said was part of her costume. Heat filled my veins, and my pulse echoed in my ears as my mind raced. The bruises on her legs that I saw in the swimming pool, the bruise on her leg in lit class, the overly baggy clothes and how she hardly ever showed skin. Rising up, I stared down at her, tempted to drag her out of this bed. But it was late, and she needed sleep. Tonight was Devil's Night. I'd let her rest for now. Because later today, I was going to find out what the fuck was going on once and for all.
Chapter 21. Emery. Present. I pulled back, staring down at her face to make sure she was real. "Alex," I smiled from ear to ear. "Oh my God."
"Shh," she hissed, glancing at the door. I know, but don't start celebrating. Neither of us is saved yet."
She shot off the bed and hurried to the door, listening for something, and then whipped around, running into the bathroom. I stared after her as she filled a glass with water and drank it down. Where the hell did she come from? How? And then I caught sight of the portrait on the wall, the massive framed painting of a little girl and her corgis frolicking in some garden hung open like a door. A secret passage. I smiled to myself. I guess I didn't need that screwdriver after all. Walking back out, she pulled her hat off her head and smiled at me with her full lips and white teeth. She'd cut her hair. The A-line shoulder-length bob curtained her long neck, strands hanging in her face and over her beautiful eyes, her green a shade darker than Will's. "How are you here?" I asked, taking in her tight jeans that were a lot more practical than the dress pants I'd arrived in, and her fitted brown leather jacket that matched her rubber-soled brown leather boots. She was dressed to run. Dirt scuffed her jaw, and she pulled off her gloves, black gunk embedded under her nails. And then I registered what she had said a moment ago, my spine straightening. She'd watched us in the drawing room last night? She'd been here, hiding, for at least a day. I shot off the bed. "Did you put me here?" I pinched my eyebrows together, anger suddenly replacing the relief I'd just felt. But her eyes darted to mine. "No," she said, knitting her brow. "God, no. I promise. I have no idea why you're here." "Then why are you here?" I demanded, tightening the towel around me. Where did you come from? How did you know about the secret passageways? Where are we?" I had too many questions, and the confusion from when I'd arrived started to bubble up again. No one had any answers. She opened the painting wider and leaned down, pulling out a black duffel bag. Walking over, she dug out some clothes and handed them to me, remaining silent. I looked down at the jeans and long-sleeved black tee and, yes, underwear and a bra. She'd packed for this. She knew she was coming here, unlike me. I swallowed, staring at her. "Alex? Why wasn't she talking?" She shuffled the stuff in her bag, refusing to look at me. "Alex!" Finally, she said in a low voice, "We're on an island, in North America." "Canada?"
She hesitated. Where in North America? I pressed. East Coast, West Coast, New England? But she just spun around, taking her canteen into the bathroom and refilling it. An island? Was it deserted? Was it near the mainland? Shit, there were millions of islands out there. Alex! I barked. God damn it. But she whisper yelled at me. Emmy, shut up! I glanced at the door again, remembering we had a house full of men on the other side who didn't know she was here. And even though I was glad she wasn't putting me at ease. I don't know why you're here, she'd said. So she knew why she was here then? How long have you been here? I demanded. How long had she been hiding in the walls? I heard those sounds the night I arrived. She hadn't been hiding that long, right? But even as the thought occurred to me, I watched her eyes shift as she filled her bottle, and the fury boiled over. I arrived on the shipment like you, she said in a low voice. I charged over, grabbed her water bottle, and threw it. I fisted her collar and shoved her away, growling. She stumbled backward, tipped over the toilet, and fell onto the ground, landing on her ass. She broke the fall with her hands, and her eyes flew up to me. What the hell is the matter with you? I gritted out as quietly as I could. Do you have any idea what could have happened to me? All this time, she'd been watching all of us. What the hell was going on? She breathed hard, but she never blinked. She knew she'd fucked up. You've been hiding in the walls, I pointed out. It didn't occur to you at some point to grab me, too? Of course it did, she said, climbing to her feet again and picking up her bottle. It just got complicated. I closed the distance between us and swatted her about 15 times lightly in the chest. God damn her. Are you hitting my boobs? She batted at my hands. Seriously. I didn't know what was going on, and while I was momentarily grateful not to be as alone as I thought, I had no doubt she had the answers I wanted and was refusing to give them to me. This was bullshit. She caught her breath and I stood there, not at all scared if she decided to hit me back. But she didn't. She just cocked an eyebrow, saying, "Save it for the plutocrats. You need me." I stood there, about ready to hit her again, but she was right. I had a much better chance of getting out of here with her. She refilled the water bottle that I'd spilled when I threw it, and I stalked back into the bedroom, throwing out the underwear and bra she gave me. I didn't put on the clothes yet, because if I faced the guys again, they'd wonder where I got them. I pulled on Iden's Oxford and tied up my wet hair into a ponytail with a rubber band I'd snatched from the asparagus in the fridge. Listen. Alex entered the room, stuffed the bottle into the bag, and tossed the duffel into the passageway again. We guessed Will was sent here several months ago, maybe a year or more. We don't know exactly. He'd been using and drinking, and we figured with his grandfather's re-election coming up, Senator Grayson took matters into his own hands before Will became a liability. A year. So he had been here that long, at least. We couldn't get him out because no one would tell us where it was, she told me. But we could get someone in. Me? But no, she said she didn't know why I was here. So that meant they sent her? Michael, Kai, Damon, I rattle off. And they sent you? She stared at me, but the hesitation in her eyes said it all. No, she finally admitted. Michael was coming. I micked him before the pickup. I narrowed my eyes. She roofied him? Why? I searched for words. Alex, why would you volunteer for this? A woman would be in so much more danger. It's crazy. Her gaze faltered, and she didn't answer me. Why would she put herself in such unnecessary risk when anyone could have come for Will? Unless she loved him. That was the only reason she'd come in Michael Christ's place. She thought only she'd be able to bring Will home. My stomach coiled and jealousy rolled through me, making my heart pound. It was my place to save him, not hers. But it was ridiculous for me to have such a thought. I knew that. I was jealous, though. I knew their history and I liked Alex more than I wanted to. But somehow it hadn't hurt until now, because she just had this way about her that made you all warm and want to be wherever she was. It was impossible to hate her. And I'd been kind of glad he had her at his side. as long as I didn't let myself wonder if she was better for him, if she made him happy. But now I couldn't keep the thought from my mind. She'd come for him. I hadn't. She was better for him. I opened my mouth. Alex, I... But she pressed her finger to her lips. Shh. The hallway outside my door creaked, and she grabbed my hand, pulling me into the secret passageway. She closed the painting, and we stood there quietly as she dug in the bag at our feet for something. "Do they know about the passageways?" I asked quietly. "I don't think so," she told me. "I've been able to skulk around undetected." "Seems weird," I said. "There's a secret room off Iden's bedroom with a two-way mirror. They should suspect there's more disguised rooms and tunnels." She rose, and then I heard a winding, the rechargeable flashlight illuminating as she pulled out a large, folded-up piece of paper that looked like a map. I dropped my eyes, noticing it wasn't paper, not normal paper anyway. I grabbed it from her, the feel instantly familiar. It was vellum. This was a blueprint. How did... where... I snatched her flashlight and turned away to inspect the plans. "If I'm being punked, I'm going to kill you," I hissed, studying the floor plan. "If this is someone's idea of a prank and we're in Thunder Bay, and they imported that waterfall you saw outside," she spat out, "think, Em." She snatched the blueprints and flashlight out of my hands and walked past me, down the tunnel. I couldn't help but glare at her back as she flipped over the folded document in her hand and studied it while we walked. No, there wasn't a waterfall in Thunder Bay, but there were plenty throughout New England, and possibly more on the hundreds of islands dotting the coast. I needed to see that blueprint again. I could read it a hell of a lot faster than she could. A faint light caught my eye and I stopped. "Alex," I whispered, inching toward the wall and closer to the light, "what's the plan here?" "If we were on an island, she had to have a boat or someone airlifting us out of here. I guessed she had some kind of tracker on her, so they knew where to come." "I have a satellite phone," she told me. "The cavalry is on its way." "What does that mean?" "The horsemen," she clarified. "They tracked me when I was transported here. We just need to hang on."
"Hang on?"
"It's been days," I bit out in her face. "I could have gotten to China and back by now, twice. Have you even talked to them? How do you know for sure they tracked you? Satellite phones use a lot of power. You would have to keep it turned on for them to track you."
"Or make a call," she retorted. I narrowed my eyes.
"You called them?"
"Yes."
"And they're coming?"
"Yes."
My shoulders relaxed a little, but still, something concerned me. "Have you talked to them recently?" I asked. Her eyes sharpened and she studied me.
"Why?"
"It's been too long," I told her. "They should have been here by now. When was the last time you spoke to them?"
She shifted on her feet, looking hesitant. "The night we arrived," she murmured. I closed my eyes, turning away.
"Shit," I said under my breath. "It's fine, Emery." Her tone was firm and decisive. "They're traveling. There's been storms, and I haven't been able to use the phone at times because I was afraid of being heard. They'll be here."
"When? One day? 8 more days?"
"We needed to leave now. Make it to the coast and wait for the boat. Anything could happen. And I still didn't know who dumped me here, but it was only a matter of time before the shit hit the fan." She walked down the passageway, and I spotted slits and holes in the concrete, light from the rooms on the other side streaming through.
"What do you know about these guys?" I asked.
All I knew was what they'd wanted me to know. "Stay away from Taylor," she said, flashing her light ahead, "and stay away from Iden Kadir."
Wow, better late than never.
I pulled her to a stop and looked at her.
"Why?"
She sighed and pulled out of my hold, continuing down the tunnel. "Micah is harmless unless you hurt Rory," she told me.
"Rory Gearden killed people," I finished for her.
But she stopped and peered through a peephole, whispering, "His twin sister was born with cerebral palsy. She was confined to a wheelchair. One night, a small party of teenagers broke into their house and brutalized her." She peered over at me. "And I mean... brutalized her." I stopped breathing for a moment, remembering his story. And one by one, he sank them to the bottom of a lake and drowned them. For his twin,
I swallowed the lump in my throat, unable to bear thinking about the details of what they might have done to her. My God. He had a motive, but that doesn't mean it takes a lot to set him in motion either, she told me. Watch yourself. His mother is an ambassador to Japan, and his family is one of the biggest real estate developers on the East Coast, specifically in for-profit prisons. That killing spree wasn't his only foray into crime. They certainly had it coming, but that doesn't mean he's done. So be careful. I frowned. He was probably unlikely to ever get out of here. That meant he had nothing to lose. Taylor definitely belongs in here, she continued. He likes to take weekend road trips to college campuses, set fires in dorms and sorority houses, and then molest girls as they try to escape. When he finally lets go, they're so scared of the fire, they don't stop to fight back or try to identify him. The image of him with my panties flashed in my mind, and I winced. And Aiden? She'd told me to stay away from him, too. But she just blurted out, just stay away from him. He doesn't get to win. Win what? How do you know all this? I asked her. She twisted around and started walking, ignoring me. I guess she must have done reconnaissance in her search for Will, but... I grabbed her, hauling her ass back. You're not telling me something. She knocked my hand off her arm and glared. I don't know why you're here or who arranged for you to be brought in, she whispered, leaning in close, but I came to get Will out, and you're going to help me. I stared at her. I don't mean to be cruel, she continued, but you better keep up and stop asking fucking questions. I like you, Em, but I'm not leaving without him, so don't straggle. Why the hurry all of a sudden? It had been days already. My breath shook as I raised my eyes again. A year, I said, hardening my eyes on her. He's been gone at least a year. And you knew that when we talked last summer. Well, what were you going to do? She fired back. Care. What the hell did she just say to me? The urge to slap her hit me, but I balled my fists instead. This isn't my fault. I stood strong. I was to blame for some things, but not everything. You're his friends. You saw him every day, and you knew what he was doing to himself. This is your fault. Maybe she was a little right. Maybe I hated myself because she'd come for him, and I'm not sure if I would have. Maybe it wouldn't have changed a damn thing if I'd known about this place months ago. Or maybe she knew nothing about me and should shut her stupid mouth. She held my eyes for a moment and then dropped her head, sighing. I'm sorry, she said. I didn't mean that. I'm worried about Will. I'm scared because I haven't heard from my friends. I don't want to be found here. And then she shook her head as if clearing it. I'm glad I'm not alone. I'm glad you're here. I chuckled despite myself. I'm not, I joked. She put her hand on my shoulder, giving me a reassuring squeeze. Nothing is going to happen to us. I'm sorry I didn't get you sooner. Why didn't you? She hesitated, searching for words. I didn't know you were here until I saw you running for your life through the forest on our first night. I spotted you from a window as they gave chase, she said. We couldn't get out until the crew got here, and you were already discovered. So you stayed hidden. I had been sedated when we arrived because I was brought here against my will. She was smuggled in, and probably awake when she entered the house. She had intel, blueprints, and supplies. She ran and found a place to hunker down, no doubt. She paused and then continued. I kept an eye on the situation from my vantage points, ready to swoop in if needed. I studied her. That made no sense. She wouldn't have been able to stop anyone from hurting me at any moment. She could have dived in at any time, collected me, and hidden me somewhere. Why leave me in their care? Every moment that she did was a gamble. What if Will doesn't want to leave? I asked her. He wasn't even remotely content, but he'd given up. Suited to his lot in life a perpetual sidekick, whether it was to Michael Crist, Kai Mori, and Damon Torrance, or Aiden Kadir. Alex was quiet for a moment as she looked for the entrance to the next passage. We just gotta wake him up. Maybe. Maybe seeing Alex would snap him out of it. Another wave of jealousy rushed over me. He would listen to her. I heard a voice through the walls and some pounding, and I trained my ears. Shh, I told her. Emery. Another knock in the distance. I darted my eyes to Alex. Shit. Spinning around, I ran back for my bedroom. Emery, no, she whispered after me. I spun around, looking at her as I walked. "The chair is under the door handle," I told her. "He knows I'm in there. He's going to wonder how I disappeared if he breaks in and sees me gone." He couldn't find out about the passageways. I ran back to my room, calling behind me, "Go to Will. Come back for me." Pushing the picture open, I leapt through, closed it, and ran to my door, scooting the chair out from underneath the knob. Opening the door, I saw Aiden standing there with a stack of clothes in his hand. I swallowed the heavy breaths pouring in and out, so he wouldn't wonder why I was out of breath.
"Why didn't you answer the door?" he asked.
"I was asleep." His eyes thinned on me. But he didn't argue further, handing the clothes out to me. I wanted to take them, since everything I had was wet, dirty, or ripped, but in my clarity, I was a little pissed. "My brother used to bring me presents, too," I told him, "after he made me bleed." I moved to close the door, but he shot out his foot, stopping me. I looked up, seeing his eyes crinkle at the corners, and I'm sure he thought we bonded or some shit over that episode in the greenhouse. And maybe we did a little, because I wasn't afraid of him anymore. But I wasn't letting him off the hook. That was mean. And also, the more I distracted him, the more time Alex might have with Will. "What are you playing at?" I asked him. "What do you want from me?" He dropped his hand, still holding the clothes, and stalked for me, forcing me back into the room as he slammed the door behind him and never took his eyes off me.
"The clothes aren't an apology," he said, tossing them behind me to the bed. "They're respect."
He stared down at me, still dressed in his black pants and smudged white t-shirt, but instead of feeling backed into a wall or defensive, I couldn't help the comfort I felt. I shouldn't need his respect or admiration, but something about it made me feel stronger. Strangely, he hadn't been exactly bad for me, had he? I grabbed the black sweatpants off the bed and slipped them on, fastening the tie and thankful these actually fit pretty perfectly, and then pulled off his dress shirt, aware of his eyes on me in my bra. I turned around and picked up the white t-shirt, slipping it on. I felt him approach.
"Does he know about your brother?" he said,
standing at my back. "Yes."
"And he's still so cold?"
I pulled the shirt down my stomach and fixed the neckline, straightening it. For a moment, Alex was forgotten. "You see Micah?" I asked him in a quiet voice, kind of playful, prone to smile, happy to let others lead because he's afraid of upsetting the balance in order to take his place. I paused, feeling him pull my ponytail out of my shirt for me. "Because he's afraid of failing?"
"Yeah."
"That was Will," I told him, "the Joker. He never had a worry in the world. Happy, because he didn't want to be unhappy. He was charmed." I turned around, my mouth dry and so weary, I just wanted to crawl into bed, almost as if I didn't care Alex was here. "He hasn't smiled since I've been here," I said. "Not the same way, anyway. He hasn't laughed or played or cracked a joke."
"He never does."
I nodded, Aiden and I holding each other's eyes. "I did that to him," I told him. "I killed him." Before I could stop it, tears sprang to my eyes, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. At this moment, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to hurt Will anymore. I didn't want to face the world. Aiden took my face in his hands, wiping my tears with his thumbs.
"Stop crying," he said. "You're in the company of killers now. You're not special."
More tears spilled over, but I drew in a deep breath, hearing him.
"Welcome to the tribe," he told me.
I broke out into a laugh as he wiped more tears, and I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. But it was nice to have someone to talk to.
"Stop crying," he said again. "Shit happens, and you did your best."
I stared at him. Those words like a glass of cool water on the fire in my head. I wanted to believe them. And there was nothing I could do to change what I'd done. But if I'd done to Aiden what I did to Will, Aiden might not sympathize with me so much. I belonged here.
Chapter 22. Emery. 9 years ago. I licked my lips but then bit my bottom one to keep from smiling. It didn't work. Heat rushed to my cheeks, and my mind kept pulling me back to last night at the cove. The feel of him, his taste and smell, and his words. God, he was incredible, so much so that I probably wouldn't have cared if he'd knocked me up last night after all. I just wanted to be his. I shook my head, trying to clear it. We committed a crime at the cemetery. What was I thinking? We could have easily been seen. Jesus. I woke at 4 a.m. to find him gone, but I was tucked in tightly and the house was locked up. My brother still wasn't home from the night shift, so I washed out the dress, hung it to dry, and took a shower before checking on my grandma and making him breakfast. Minutes before he was due to be home, the nurse showed up, and I grabbed the dress and my school bag that Martin had left inside the front door, and then I left him a note before escaping the confrontation. Walking into the cathedral, I dug my key out of my pocket and hurried past the aisle. Rounding one of the columns, I hit something and stumbled back, looking up to see a dark-eyed girl, her mouth hanging open in surprise. She reached out and grabbed me before I could fall. "Sorry," she breathed out, looking in a hurry. I laughed under my breath, tightening my arm around the dress. "That's okay. Accident." I hesitated for a moment, taking in her worn jeans, black sweatshirt, and the tattered pair of black Vans on her otherwise bare feet. A black ski cap covered her head, but I caught sight of a low black ponytail hanging over her shoulder and down her chest. Pretty. Beautiful, actually. Definitely not Thunder Bay prep, though. Too bad. Would have been nice to have another girl with my winning sense of style. "Excuse me," I said, and continued past her. I headed toward the stairs, but threw a glance over my shoulder, watching as she opened the middle door of the confessional, the cubby for the priest where he sat to listen to sins. She looked around and then locked eyes with me, seeing me watch her. She raised her finger to her lips, telling me to keep quiet before she slipped inside with a mischievous smile and closed the door. I laughed to myself and turned back around, jogging up the stairs to the door in the gallery. Grabbing the handle, I glanced over my shoulder one more time and saw Kai Mori. He headed to the back of the church, and my heart skipped a beat as I watched him enter the confessional, the door to the left of the priest's chamber, to make his confession. Only it wasn't a priest in there, I snorted. Oh, shit. I shook my head and opened the door, taking the hidden steps up to the Carfax room. Not sure what she was up to, but who was I to ruin her fun? I had my own problems. Closing the door, I looked around the room, seeing everything exactly as I'd left it. The bed still held my dent from when I'd laid there yesterday after escaping Martin, and all the old makeup still laid about the floor in front of the mirror, propped up underneath the stained glass window. Walking over, I hung the dress up on a rafter and smoothed it out, looking at it with a flutter in my stomach, remembering last night. Who else had worn it before me? Did their night beat mine? Taking off my bag, I worked quickly, picking up the makeup, fixing the bed, and stuffing my clothes from yesterday into my school bag. My phone laid on the bedside table, and I took it, turning it on. 14%. The battery was almost dead, and I had umpteen calls from Martin. And a message from Will. I opened it.
"Morning. Smile. Or don't. It's completely your choice. Don't let a guy tell you you're prettier when you do. You don't need to be pretty for anyone. Your value does not rely on my opinion. Damn the patriarchy."
I laughed, shaking hard with my eyes watering. What a moron. The smile slowly fell, though, knowing he was too good to keep. I sure liked him, though. So much it hurt. I typed a message to Martin, letting him know I'd be home right after school, and I'd have dinner ready. Heading to class now. Before I left the room, I walked to the window, peering through a wedge of clear glass and seeing two boys crossing the street to their cars, Damon to his BMW and Kai to his Jeep Wrangler. Damon was in here this morning, too? I kind of wondered what happened with Kai and that girl in the confessional, but I was going to be late if I didn't hurry. I sighed, watching them take off and head toward school. It was Devil's Night and time to face the music, I guess. I left the room, locking the door behind me.
"Devil's Night!"
someone screamed, racing down the halls and leaping into the air to snatch the homecoming banner hanging over the hallway. I gripped the strap of my bag in both hands, the excitement in the air, raising the hair on my arms. "Man, back off!" a girl yelled. I turned my head to see Rika Fane pushing some guy away who had crashed into Winter Ashby. She just laughed, holding onto Erica's arm as they scurried away. "Did you see it?" Tabitha Schultz whispered to her friends as I passed. "David and I drove past this morning. It's a mess." I faltered in my steps, but I kept going.
Was she talking about the crypt? My stomach churned, suddenly feeling guilty. But I wasn't sad. I was sorry for the McClanahans, but not for my brother. Please just let me get away with it. I turned, heading into first period, but a hand swiped under my tie, flipping it up. Will circled in front of me, a grin he couldn't contain playing on his lips as he came down, ready to kiss me. I nudged him away, making sure the classroom was empty. Stop it. He grabbed my tie, pulling me in.
I can't.
My thighs warmed, and the breath from his mouth tickled my lips. I licked mine, taking a deep breath and tasting him. It was just once. I walked around him, toward a desk. That's what we agreed to.
I don't remember that conversation. Was I present for it?
I arched an eyebrow, seeing other students enter the room as I set my bag on the floor next to a chair. He leaned down, his words tickling the hair by my ear.
It's not enough, he said in a low voice, not even nearly enough. All I think about now is how I want last night all over again. But this time in my car, in my bed, in your bed, in the shower, outside.
I exhaled, sweat cooling my forehead. Whipping around, I put a hand on his stomach, keeping him at bay.
And you want it too, he taunted, fisting my tie, or you wouldn't be carrying me with you.
Yeah, I was wearing his tie. So what? Have a little foresight. Come on, we liked each other. I loved last night, and I hoped he did too, but life was more complicated than that. We wouldn't make it, and at our age, it was ridiculous to expect anything more. I'd sneak out a few more times, we'd have fun, someone would fall in love, and then we'd both fall apart as he got tired of all the things I couldn't do and constantly worried about helping me fit in. He would lose nothing. Everything is a game to you, I said, about to slide into my seat. But he took me and pulled me down into his lap as he sat next to my desk.
Not everything.
I pushed against him, seeing Michael stare at us as he took a seat in front of Will, turning just in time to hide his shitty-ass grin. Will, I muttered, pleading. He took my jaw softly in his hand, giving me pause.
I need to talk to you, he said, his eyes serious now. The bruises on your back. Did you have an accident, or...
I wrenched my eyes away, seeing Townsend walk in. It's time for class. I pushed out of his lap, but he pulled me back.
I need to talk to you, he gritted out, and it's not waiting.
I swatted at him, my palm landing against his neck, and I spotted all the hickeys I left last night. Or maybe one of them was still from the theater. I couldn't remember. My blood raced, seeing the evidence of how different I was in the dark. God, what did he do to me? He searched my eyes, whispering,
Do you like me, Em?
Needles instantly pricked my throat. I gazed at him, not wanting to answer the question, but not wanting to lie either. I just wanted to kiss him. I inched in, his eyes dropping to my mouth as he wrapped his arms around my waist.
Mr. Townsend, Kincaid called over the intercom.
I sucked in a breath, stopping and turning my head to the teacher.
Yes,
he answered. I jumped out of Will's lap and slid into my own seat.
Would you be so kind as to send the following students to my office when they arrive, please? Kincaid asked. Michael Crist, Damon Torrance, Kai Mori, and William Grayson. Thank you.
Ooh, everyone in the class roared. My pulse jumped, and I looked over at Will as Damon sighed and the other two rose from their seats. He shook his head, trying to calm me. The crypt. I didn't even think about that. Everyone would assume it was the horsemen. Was that why Kincaid was calling them up?
Take your bags and books with you, just in case, Townsend told them.
Just in case of what? Expulsion? Arrest? They trailed in a line across the front of the classroom, toward the door, every single one turning their heads and eyeing me. A smile curled Damon's lips as he lifted his finger and wagged it at me. Kai saw him, breaking out in a laugh, as they disappeared through the door, and I didn't think I blinked for a solid minute. Shit! As soon as class ended, I didn't turn right like I was supposed to. I didn't go to my locker to pick up my chem book, and I did not pass go. I charged into the front office, tempted to go for the front doors instead to check for a police car, but I was already here. I need to speak with Mr. Kincaid, I told the secretary, as I placed my hands on the long counter. She glanced up from the stack of packets she was counting out.
About?
I opened my mouth, but someone spoke up first.
She's not getting in until after me.
I spun around, seeing Trevor Crist's hair dripping wet as he held tissues to his nose.
I'll wait, I told the secretary. I looked over at Kincaid's door, seeing shadows move behind the frosted glass as my stomach rolled at all the possibilities happening inside. I sat a couple of chairs down from Crist, trying to eavesdrop, but all I could hear was mumbling. I was tempted to let them take the fall if they offered, because they'd get out of it, and I wouldn't. But I wasn't that person.
Aren't you going to ask me what happened? Trevor asked.
I looked over at him, a molecule of sympathy coursing through my body. But it was just another day in Thunder Bay. I don't really care, I said. Sorry. I heard him scoff as I watched the shadows move, barely listening as he went on and on.
Someday, all of this is going to catch up with them, he spat out.
He was talking about the horsemen. I guessed it was them, or one of them, whom he got into it with. Everyone says that, I sighed. Even me at one point.
It'll happen, he argued, and I won't be the only one laughing when it does.
I turned my gaze on him, seeing his jaw flex, big anger on him for a freshman. Part of me admired the kid. He hated his brother and made no show of anything else. I understood it when maybe not everyone would. The door to Kincaid's office opened, and I stood up, a slew of people walking out, including my brother. He saw me, and I straightened, racking my brain for any excuse.
You boys get back to class, Kincaid told them. I'm letting you practice during seventh period, so you can cut out early for festivities tonight. Don't make me regret it, and I mean it, Torrance.
Damon chuckled as Martin stood off to the side, eyeing me with fire in his eyes.
What are you doing up here? He asked.
Picking up college fair information, I said, shifting on my feet before finding the brochures on the wall. I grabbed one. What happened in there? What were they talking about? Did Martin know?
Trevor, Kincaid said. Come on in.
Trevor stepped toward the dean's office, coming up chest to chest with Damon and looking really brave like he wasn't a foot shorter than the senior.
You know, someday I won't be a kid, he gritted out, and you'll be fighting someone your own size. It still won't be a fair fight, princess, Damon told him, getting in his face. But you're welcome to try. Just bring yourself some lube.
Will laughed a little, and Michael pushed Damon away from his brother.
Enough. Let's get to class.
The two just stood there, neither one wanting to give in first.
Everyone to class. Now,
Kincaid barked. The boys moved away from each other, maintained eye contact for a few extra seconds for good measure, before they started to filter out of the front office. I stood there for a moment, trying to figure out what had happened. They weren't in trouble. Okay, that was good. Should I still fess up? I paused, waiting to see if my brother would leave, but Will just nudged me out the door.
Don't say anything, he whispered so
Martin wouldn't hear. My words, apology, and explanation lodged in my throat, and I gave my brother a tight smile as I left to get back to class. But the look in his eyes told me he knew I was up to something. We left, Damon hitting lockers and making a ruckus as we all trailed down the hall.
I'll see you in economics, Will told Michael, as he held me back and everyone else went ahead of us.
We stopped in the empty hall, second period already begun, and the others disappearing around the corner or up the stairs. Does he know? I asked quietly. Kincaid?
Yeah, he told me, nodding. I mean, he thinks it was the guys and me. He can't prove it, but he has no intention of trying to either.
So they all just let him believe it was them? Why would they do that? I guess it's good to be you, I said, pretty grateful. Will came in close, looking down at me.
They've filled McClanahan's grave back in. The family has had a change of heart.
He cleared his throat, reciting the news.
It's become a landmark, which basically translates to they don't want to deal with constant vandalism, so they'll leave him where he's always rested.
So it worked. It actually worked.
Everything is real, he stated.
Huh?
That's what you said last night as you were climbing into your bed, he pointed out. Everything is real today. Am I less real at night? Is that why you're pulling away this morning?
Yes, I swallowed over the pain in my throat. I mean, it was fun. I would love for it to happen again, but...
Who's doing that to your body? He demanded.
I tensed, taking a step back.
You have bruises everywhere.
His eyes trailed up to my brow and the small cut I'd covered with makeup.
Is it your brother?
My hands trembled. He was figuring it out. I knew he would. I blinked away the sting in my eyes.
Emmy, stop lying to me, he said softly. I know something's wrong. I know it. Tell me.
The lump in my throat stretched. God, I wanted to tell him. I didn't want to lose this. I wanted to let him hold me and protect me. He cared. As much as I wanted to pretend that he didn't, I knew he cared. And my heart that ached to keep him hurt worse than anything Martin had ever done to me. But I couldn't tell him. If I let this go on, he'd interfere. He'd make trouble, stand up for me, and I could be separated from her. I could be sent away. I didn't want my grandmother alone. My chin shook, the words on the tip of my tongue. It would feel so good to dive into his arms and look forward to more with him. I wanted to tell him everything. But I just clenched my teeth so hard my jaw ached and backed away some more, forcing a scoff. I shook my head, my bitter smile fixed on him. I looked at his mouth and then his hands, remembering how all of him was mine last night. We couldn't be together. Maybe someday. Not today. He grabbed my elbow and pulled us close again.
Don't you know you can have anything you want?
He repeated his words from a couple of weeks ago.
I'd hurt anyone for you. Who the hell is it?
But I just laughed, feeling the tears well. God, go away. I balled my fist and ripped my arm away from him. Let go of me. I glared at him. Go have fun with your friends. They're all you really have, so hang on to them. I don't love you, and I don't want you. The words were like razors in my throat, and I wanted to throw up. But I stayed still as fire hit his eyes and his heavy breath poured in and out of his chest.
Emmy?
Jesus, just go. Stop torturing me with everything I wanted and nothing I could have. I'd make his life horrible. Leave me alone, I gritted out.
You're just pushing me away.
We're just too different. I backed away some more. You thought this was serious? You've been on half the girls in the graduating class. If I knew that you thought last night was something more, I never would have come to homecoming.
He bared his teeth. Stop it, he bit out. You hear me? Stop it. Last night was it for me. I don't want anyone else but you.
Tears sprang to my eyes, and I forced back the sob in my throat. God, I loved him. This hurt. I had to get out of here. I couldn't be someone he had to take care of. Someone pathetic who would just bring a shit ton of baggage on him that he'd get sick of dealing with. Drawing in a deep breath, I forced the words out, my stomach racking with pain. I wanted you to, I said, my voice hard. And I had you. It was fun. Even better than the gossip says it is. Now I'm done.
God damn it.
I'll be hard-pressed to find anyone better in bed, I told him. That's for sure. Whipping around, he slammed his fists into the lockers, and I stared wide-eyed and hot in my gut as he looked ready to kill. Yes, hate me. Please hate me.
Such a fucking...
He trailed off, too coward to say bitch. My chin trembled. He turned and looked at me.
You know how easy you are to replace? Is that what you want, then?
And he snapped his fingers in my face.
Because it would be that easy.
My body racked with jealousy because I knew it was just a threat, but I still wanted to slice him all the way to hell if he put his hands on any other girl. But I felt myself getting stronger, feeding off the hate and the pain and the anger. Get on with it, then, I snarled, and rot in hell for all I care. I stalked off, back to my locker, and left him in my dust, waiting until I'd rounded the corner before I let the tears fall. I squeezed my eyes shut, sobbing quietly as I started running. Will. Chapter 23. Emery. Present. Iden left my room, telling me dinner was in an hour, courtesy of Taylor. I was pretty sure I didn't want to eat or drink anything from that guy, but he said I would be served first. I guess that meant if I wanted the guys to eat at all, I needed to show up. I nodded, kept my mouth shut, and closed my door without the chair securing it this time. If anyone came into my room, they'd just figure I'd left and they'd missed me. Slipping into the secret passageway again, I carefully pulled the picture closed and squatted down, digging inside the duffel bag Alex had left and fishing around for another flashlight.
I found a mess of clothes, granola bars, a water bottle, a blanket, a knife, and some rope. No extra flashlights. Were the granola bars all she had been eating? Aiden hadn't mentioned anything was missing from the kitchen, but Alex was slick. I hoped she was swiping better food while everyone was asleep. She had to have been coming out of her hiding places to go to the bathroom, at least. I slid my hand around the inside of the bag, feeling for the satellite phone, but no such luck. Had she hid it somewhere? Zipping up the duffel, I started down the tunnel without a flashlight and no idea where she'd gone. The tunnels probably covered every floor, and she'd had days to explore. I didn't even know where Will's room was. I jogged down the hidden hallway, the scent of earth and sea surrounding me like I was deep in a cave, and the echo of the waterfall outside beating around me. Thin beams of light streamed into the dark corridor from the rooms I passed, and I quickly peered through each one to make sure Alex and Will weren't in there. Coming to the end of the hall, I saw the tunnel continue on my left, and then looked ahead, seeing the ladder leading down. Will showered in the natatorium. After the greenhouse, he might have gone there. I descended the ladder, feeling it whine under my weight and instantly recognizing the same sound from the other day, in the walls in the hall leading to the pool. Alex had been right there next to me, and I hadn't seen her. She should have made herself known. What the hell was she thinking? I shook my head, pushing the anger back again as slivers of wood poked my palms. I stepped down, immediately jogging through the passageway. Panels and doorways appeared here and there, outlining entrances into various rooms, and I really hoped no one else knew about this, because there was so much space to hide and watch, and if I needed a shortcut to get somewhere fast, this was perfect. I wouldn't get my hopes up, though. Aiden was smart, and he'd been here over 2 years. If he hadn't found this yet, I'd be surprised. I passed the gym, wondering how much longer the boys would be hunting and where Aiden was. I had yet to see him at all. A thud hit somewhere close, like a piece of furniture jostling, and I paused for a moment before running down the corridor toward it. "Ah!" someone shouted, and I stopped, leaning my ear into the wall.
"Come on, you can do better than that," Taylor said.
"Taylor? I thought he went hunting with Mike and Rory." There was mumbling, and I knew they were on the other side of this wall. I scanned for the peephole, finding it a foot away and peering through it. Taylor crouched on the other side of the pool table, only his head visible as he popped up every once in a while, someone else's hands squeezing his neck. "What the hell?" I mouthed. And then I spotted something to the right and squinted. Alex crept up behind Taylor, already in the room with a thick wooden candlestick in her hand, and I widened my eyes, sucking in a breath. Shit, what was she doing? But before I could locate the opening she'd slipped through, she'd raised her arm and brought down the candlestick in a hard blow across the back of Taylor's head. He jerked, froze, and fell over, collapsing onto the floor, and she stood there, breathing hard and staring down at him. In a moment, Will had shot to his feet, wiping the blood from under his nose.
"Alex!"
he gaped at her. She didn't look happy, though. "What the hell are you doing?" she snapped, whispering over Taylor's unconscious body on the floor. "You could have handled that guy. I've been watching you get your ass kicked for days. What are you doing?" He just stared at her, stunned.
"What the fuck are you doing here?"
She paused and then said, "That's it? That's all you've got to say?" She waved her hand at her head. "Not a word about my hair?" I almost snorted, despite my pulse racing. I'd never actually seen them interact together. I met Alex long after Will was sent here. She was so comfortable with him. He blinked at her, wiping his nose as more blood dripped out, and then he grabbed her hand.
"Fuck," he cursed, swinging open the door and yanking her out of the room. "Goddamn son of a bitch."
He bolted with her, and I stilled, wondering if I should jump out and run with them. But I stayed in the walls, racing toward the corridor instead. I peered into every room I passed, afraid he was taking her upstairs to his room, but he wouldn't risk keeping her out in the open that long. I passed the drawing room, peeked in quickly, and was about to fly off to the next room, but then I saw him slip inside, pulling her behind him, and close the door, securing it with a chair. I looked through the thin slit in the bookshelf I knew was on the other side of this wall, watching as she threw her arms around him, nearly knocking him over.
I pressed on the wall, about to open it, but I stayed, watching. His arms hung limply at his sides for a minute, but then he snapped out of it and wrapped them around her, squeezing her tight. She sobbed, quietly, pressing her lips to his cheek as he closed his eyes, smiling, really smiling, for the first time since I'd been here. My heart ached.
"I missed you, kid,"
he said. She nodded, still hugging him. "We're going home." They held each other for another few moments, and then pulled away, staring into each other's eyes.
"How'd you figure this out?"
he asked, pulling off his shirt to wipe down his face and the remnants of his fight with Taylor. "I didn't," she replied.
"Rika?" he asked.
"Misha and Damon figured it out, actually." A laugh bubbled out of him, the deep, rich sound like deja vu. He was a teenager at the Cove all over again. Rika. He meant Erica Fane. I'd heard she was engaged to Michael Christ, one of his best friends. Kai was married and a father, as was fucking Damon Torrance. Shocker. Misha Grayson was his younger cousin. He went to Thunder Bay Prep, too, but that was after my time. Alex knew all of them. She was a part of his life now, friends with his friends.
"Damon and Misha?" Will mused. "Like in the same room?"
"There may have been blood," she joked. A knot twisted and twisted in my stomach, listening to them. But then he grabbed her, squeezing her arms.
"You want to tell me what you're doing here, huh? This was stupid."
She looked at him, worry etched on her brow, and then he released her and walked away, tossing his t-shirt onto a chair. The black ink all over his body melted into itself in the dim light. She approached him. "It's been a year. You had to know we were going to figure out something was wrong," she told him. "Your parents are telling everyone you're doing humanitarian work in, like, South Sudan or something." He started laughing as he rubbed his forehead. She knit her brow. "Why are you laughing?"
"Because I don't know if I'm more hurt that it took you all so long to come after me, or aggravated that you had no faith that I'd be able to get myself out of this on my own."
"At least you're not mad they sent a girl," she shot back, shrugging her shoulders. He flashed her a look.
"Oh, I know you get shit done."
He said it with almost a reverence. I didn't know what I'd thought, but I didn't think they were so chummy. I wasn't sure why. It was like he was one of the guys when he was with her, at ease. She shifted on her feet, the silence stretching between them. "So, if you want to bring anything, I'd pack it now. I have an exit plan, but I can't say when it'll go down. I need you to be ready." He didn't move, though.
"How did you get here?" he asked. "Can you get back?"
"What do you mean?" He wet his lips, finding the words.
"I need you out of this house, now, this minute."
Her brow creased with confusion. "What's the matter with you?" she whispered, but I could hear the worry in her voice. "I'm taking you home."
"No, you're leaving," he said. "And you're going to tell them I can solve my own problems. I don't need help."
"And Emery?" He stopped, straightening his spine as he looked down at her.
"What do you know? Did you have her brought here? Did Michael?"
"She just asked me the same thing," Alex blurted out. "Why would we do something so dumb? I have no idea who sent her here or why, but it was probably that brother of hers. My brother didn't have the funds for this place, and I wasn't that important." Will regarded her.
"You know her?" he asked.
She nodded. "We met last spring." Will's eyebrow shot up. "Don't give me that look," she told him. "She was in Thunder Bay burying her grandmother. We ran into each other. I didn't seek her out."
"How long have you been here?" he asked.
Alex remained quiet, and a look crossed his face that said he knew the answer.
"So you arrived on the shipment with her days ago, and you what?" he continued. "Spotted her and decided to roll the dice and stay hidden to see this play out with her and me?"
She folded her arms across her chest, a satisfied smirk on her face.
"Get her out of here," he bit out, "and both of you fuck off."
My breathing turned shallow. That was why she left me on my own these past days. She couldn't get caught and risk stalling communication with their friends who were on their way, which I understood. But she wanted to see what would happen with Will and me, maybe for her own interest or maybe for his. He didn't want to leave. Why? Alex stepped toward him, staring hard into his eyes. "Damon's second child is on the way," she said. "Michael and Rika are getting married on Devil's Night. They're getting ready to tear down the Cove and move forward with the resort. We need to leave."
Sounds like everything is going pretty well without me, actually.
She swatted him twice. Not really hard, but I could hear her palm hitting his chest. He reared back. I almost prefer you wasted, she growled in a low voice, because I have no idea who you are right now. When we met, what did I say to you? He stood there, silent, contrite, and not spouting another word. I can take anything as long as I have enough lipstick, she recited. I just shove it all underneath an extra coat, like you always did with your smiles. Rika, Michael, all of them, they're my family. She softened her voice, nearly choking on the tears. But you, you're my reflection. Now snap out of it. You're coming with me, or...
Just trust me, okay?
He said suddenly, finally standing tall again and turning to face her.
I know what I'm doing. Just trust me this once.
He took her face in his hands, and I dropped my eyes, backing away, because I couldn't watch it anymore. She was better for him. She was worlds better for him. And even though I knew it was reckless, just like all the times I did things in high school, knowing Martin would find out and knowing the consequences, I ran. The toe of my sneaker banged into a pipe, a clang piercing the air. But I didn't care if they heard. I ran and ran with every intention of getting out of here once and for all. It was time. I didn't know where I was, where I was going, or how I would survive in the cold forest, but that was the thing about me. Somehow I always made it through. Climbing the ladder back up to my room, I bolted down the tunnel and slipped through the portrait again. I grabbed the sweatshirt Idem brought me, slipped it on, and stuck the knife in my back pocket, leaving my claw glove and darting out of the room. Heading down the stairs, I looked quickly around the foyer, the statues and candles flickering and looming as if there was a presence I couldn't see, and I dove into the kitchen, snatching my bundle from the cupboard. Pulling up my hood, I ran for the back door. But just then, the panel on the wall popped open and slid over as Alex slipped through, blocking my way. Will walked in behind me, both of them breathing hard and fast, like they'd been rushing to cut me off. They must have heard me stumble over the pipe in the tunnel. Emmy, you have to be quiet, Alex whispered, peering over my shoulder in case anyone else came. I won't be able to get you out if he locks me up. He? Iden. You want to leave, then? I challenged her. Then let's leave now. You chose to be here. I didn't. I want to go home. I didn't want to be here with them both. I didn't want to be here at all. I didn't give a shit if I died out there right now. You're my reflection. The backs of my eyes burned. She shook her head at me. I'm not leaving without him. Fine. I rounded the island, shoved the only apothecary jar left at Will, and he jumped back as it crashed on the floor. I bolted from the room, racing back through the house and toward the front door. If he wasn't ready to leave, I wasn't waiting. I made my own choices. I didn't know why I was so pissed, because I knew what had happened between them, and he had no obligation to me, of all people, but seeing the bond up close, it was stronger than I thought. It never occurred to me it was strong at all. How could I have been so stupid? It hurt. Someone grabbed me, and I dropped the bag of food, staring at Alex. You'll die of exposure, she said, barely above a murmur. You won't last the night. So, what were you planning to do here? I barked, jerking my chin at Will as he strolled in behind Alex. Use me as a distraction as you made your escape with him? I was planning on escaping with him the day I got here and hide with him until help arrived, she retorted. But you showed up and fucked up my plans. Now I have two people to extract. Ah, so sorry for the inconvenience. Either way, I was out of here. He didn't want to leave, and she didn't want to leave without him, so screw it. No one is going to save you, I told him, looking over her shoulder into his eyes. This is no one's fault but yours. It's time to save yourself, Will. But he just stood there like an oak, his green eyes hard on me, as his brown hair, still wet from the greenhouse, hung in disarray. He didn't fight for himself. He didn't stand up for himself. He never did. You were always pathetic, I told him, sneering. You know that? Always so naive and clueless and pathetic. A smack landed on my face, the sting spreading across my cheek and blood seeping into my mouth where it cut on my teeth. I took two breaths and slowly turned my face back, staring at Alex and her fiery eyes. Emmy, I'm sorry,
she bit out. I really am. But I'm not leaving without him, and you're not leaving either because you'll die out there. Think. You won't know where to go, and you'll cost me more time than you already have. Like that's even remotely my fault. I was leaving, damn it, whether she liked it or not. I wasn't important to her. Or him. What do you care anyway? I growled, shoving her back so hard she stumbled. You'll have him all to yourself now. No competition. And to my surprise, she just chuckled and rushed back up to me, planting her hand over my mouth to shut me up. I slapped her back, trying to get free but to no avail. Is that what you are, Emery? She taunted. Competition? I stand over my grandmother's grave, the breeze kicking up as it blows through the trees. I wipe a tear off my cheek. I should be happy, right? She stuck around much longer than we thought she would, like she knew she needed to be here for me. It's been over 6 years, almost seven, since I've been home, and even now I look for Martin, afraid to run into him, and afraid of everything else that fills this town. Sooner or later, I'll have to pay the piper. I just hope it isn't today. I walk to my rental car, hugging myself against the chill still in the spring air, and slide into the driver's seat, starting the engine. My flight back to California isn't until tomorrow, so that means I have to spend the night in Meridian City, because I'm not taking a chance of being caught in Thunder Bay any longer than necessary. Still, though, I've learned how to straighten my hair, and I have my prescription sunglasses and matching pressed clothes that fit me. No one will recognize me anymore. I drive out of the cemetery, not looking at Edward McClanahan's grave, but knowing exactly when I pass it as I exit the cemetery and turn up the music. White Flag by Bishop Briggs playing loud. I drive down the highway, tempted to look at the mansions as I pass, the Crists and the Fanes, the Torrances and Ashbys, but I don't, just hoping some semblance of his life is back to what it used to be, even if I already knew he was undoubtedly changed. I just hope he's gone, traveling, living, loving, and being loved. Tears spring to my eyes again, but I blink them away, nausea rolling through me. I did what I had to do, right? I might have even saved him from a worse fate. But no matter how often I tell myself that, I still don't feel it. I need to face him and come clean. This is eating a hole through me, and if he hasn't come for me yet, then he doesn't know, and he should. I can't do this anymore. Entering the village, I risk a drive past my old house, seeing newspapers scattered about the lawn, as well as the overgrown hedges and the garbage can laying on its side. Does Martin still live there? There are no cars in the driveway. After Grandmère passed a week ago, I emailed him and hoped for no response. He told me to let him know what my plans were. I didn't. I'll let him know once I'm gone. Only then can he come and pay his respects. He hasn't shown up in years to see her, thank goodness, so he isn't crying his eyes out about her death. I know that much. I keep driving, not knowing where I'm going, but when I see the cove ahead, I veer into the parking lot. I heard they were getting ready to tear it down. Someone on the alumni committee sent me an invite to a throwback celebration a while back, but of course I didn't bother showing up. Me, here, and near Devil's Night? Yeah, not happening. I spot a couple of cars in the otherwise deserted lot and pull into a barely outlined space where the weeds push up through the concrete and the painted lines are chipped and faded. Shutting off the car, I step out and stick the keys into the pocket of my jeans, looking around as I stroll along and find my way inside. The sea lay beyond the Ferris wheel, and I can smell the salt in the air as I drift past the ticket booths and toward the pirate ship. The yellow and brown paint is chipped, and I can see the rusted bolts from here as it sits silent and still, an eerie death hanging over the park that chills my skin. I almost hear the carnival music from that night in my head as I walk closer and closer, seeing where he and I sat. A fist squeezes my heart. I miss him. I didn't realize back then how much this would hurt and how long it would stay with me.
Well, of course, you're not on board. Some guy gripes, because as soon as you find out what I want, you decide you want the exact opposite.
I jerk my head left and right, realizing I'm not alone. You're such a liar, she says. That's not true at all. This location makes no sense, and I've had the same talk with Kai. Kai? Finally, I spot a trio walking by the bumper boats, and I slip behind a game booth, out of sight as I peer around it.
Michael Christ carries a rolled-up wad of papers, looking like they might be blueprints. He's walking with two women, one with black hair and the other with brown. I squint through my sunglasses. The black-haired one looks a little familiar, but I don't think I know her. You can't build a marina down there, she spits back at Christ. Guests won't have access to a beach either. It's all rocks, remember? And when the nor'easters blow in, no one's going to appreciate a front row seat to cyclone-force winds, rain, and snow. The entire coastline is eroding, and it's going to erode right up into your fucking golf course. I bite back my smile. I've never heard anyone talk to him like that. I like her.
That'll take 1,000 years,
he whines, and then looks to the other woman.
Alex, a little help here.
Oh, no. She taps away on her phone. Don't let me interrupt. He shakes his head, leading the way through the park and back toward the lot, wearing a black suit and looking even more handsome than he did in high school, unfortunately. I haven't followed his basketball career, but I know he still plays professionally. Great. With him around, that means the rest of the crew is close. Who are these women, though?
I need to talk to Kai, he grumbles.
Yeah, run home to Daddy, the black-haired one replies, because I'm making too much sense for you. He rolls his eyes and keeps going, the ladies following him. It looks like he's planning to buy the property. And for a golf course? She also mentioned guests, which sounds like a hotel of some sort. A feeling of loss creeps in, and I'm not sure why. I have no right. It was just a great night, and as long as this place is here, it feels like maybe not everything has disappeared. I wait there for another minute, looking past the Ferris wheel, toward Cold Point. I'm half tempted to take a walk out there, but I already nearly got caught. It's time to go. I head out to the parking lot again, pulling out my phone to check the time. But as I approach my rental, I see someone sitting on the hood. It was the brown-haired woman from inside, her white tank top too short to cover her stomach. She stared at me with her sunglasses resting on the bridge of her nose and pouty, plum-colored lips. I halt, looking around. The other cars are gone, and I don't see Michael or the other woman. Hi. I walk toward my car hesitantly. I didn't mean any harm, I was just looking around. They appeared to own the property now, and I guess I was trespassing? But she just gives me a small smile. You're Emery Scott. I pinch my brows together. I recognize you from a photo I saw once, she explains. And you are Alex Palmer? She crosses her legs, leaning back on a hand. A friend of Will Grayson's. I tense, dropping my eyes down her form and taking in the fact that no man has friends who look like that. I saw that, she teased. What? That little eyes falling down my body to inspect the competition with a side of judgment. Look, she said, rolling her neck with attitude. Competition? Is that what she is? I chuckle, digging in my pocket for my keys as I walk for the driver's side door. I wasn't looking at you like that. Checking me out, then? Yeah. I unlock the door and open it. That's it. You back in town for good? No. Just visiting? Yes. And you stopped by the cove? She presses. Why? None of your business. I stand inside the door, staring at her. Would you get off my car? I mean, how nosy. I need a ride, she tells me, if you don't mind. I pause. Excuse me? A lift? She clarifies as if I'm dumb. I'm not a taxi, I retort. And I don't know you. Saucy, she teases. He was right about you. He? Will told her I was saucy? Well, if that's the worst thing he said, I suppose I'm lucky. I open my mouth, dying to ask about him. Is he in town? Is he okay? Is he happy? But I clamp it shut again, knowing she's his friend, not mine. Hopping off my hood, she hangs over the door, peering up at me. You give me a ride, and I'll pay for the pizza and margaritas, she says. Pizza and margaritas? Is she kidding? What do you want with me? I ask. She doesn't know me, and I don't for one second believe this is anything but a trick. But then again, the only thing I believe about people is their worst, so... I don't know, she tells me, her voice softening. But do you ever have that feeling that you need something, but you just don't know what? She looks at me, a thoughtful look in her eyes.
like a drink or a good cry or to jump on a plane and see something new, she continues. But then none of those things are it, and you still can't figure it out what it is you need.
Her words resonate with me more than she knows. The only difference is I know what I need. I just can't have it.
Well, when I saw you inside the park just before, she tells me, and recognized you, I felt like we'd found it.
We? Why would she need me?
Styx is still the place to be, she sings songs, the best pizza.
No, I shake my head, not there, I don't want to be seen.
Pizza sounds good, and lots of margaritas sounds fantastic. My lonely hotel room back in the city seems dreadful now, but I just don't want to run into anyone, I tell her.
Thanks, though.
She holds my eyes for a moment. He's not in town right now, if that's what you're worried about. I look at her just long enough for her to take that as an affirmative and run around the front of the car to climb into the passenger seat. He wasn't in town? Where was he? But it was none of my business. Whatever. I sit down, seeing her pull on her seatbelt. I start the car, a little weirded out, but I have a feeling she doesn't like the word no, and I'm not a fan of confrontation.
Where do you live? I ask.
I can give her a ride home, I guess. But she just pushes her sunglasses up the bridge of her nose and replies, Margaritas first. By the next morning, she was dragging my hungover ass to the airport so I didn't miss my flight. We'd started at Styx and taxied to Meridian City, where we drank more at Realm, and then crashed in my hotel room. I hated her and her amazing body and her pretty face, and all the times I couldn't help but think about how he'd touched her and held her. Yet I couldn't hate her because she was absolutely splendid despite how she'd struggled in life. I'd woken up with a splitting headache, and then I hated her more for the hangover, but she texted, she called, she checked up on me over the months until I was convinced that I might actually be likable. Until I remembered she was Will's good friend, and I was keeping a secret she might hate me for. Will stood in the foyer facing me, his eyes on fire, and I wanted to take him to my room, close the door, and hold him forever. But he knew how this would end tonight. I wouldn't grovel, and I was leaving. I shoved Alex away and darted for the door, but she caught me and threw me to the floor. I crashed, my body racking with pain as I caught my breath and glared up at her from the marble floor. I didn't waste another second. Blasting off the ground, I lunged for her, ready to tear right through her if I had to, because the only person I knew how to fight for was myself.
Chapter 24. Emery. 9 years ago.
I folded the tie slowly and stuck it in the Ziploc bag, followed by my Cove ride-all-day bracelet from last night, and the collapsed empty box of milk duds he got me at the movie theater. Squishing the air out of the bag, I sealed it, tears hanging at the corner of my eyes as I dropped it into an empty coffee can and capped it, setting the whole thing in the 2-foot-deep hole. I couldn't keep him close, but I couldn't throw him away either. Maybe someday I'd dig up my little time capsule and be able to laugh at how little any of it meant anymore. I hope. An engine roared to my right, and I looked up from where I knelt on the foundation of the gazebo and saw Damon's BMW slide into a spot in the alley next to Styx. He jumped out of the car and walked inside, the whole place booming with activity. My brother came home for a while this afternoon, finding me where I said I'd be, and with my homework done and dinner ready, too. He barely said 2 words as he ate, showered, and redressed to go back out for another shift. Tonight, they'd need all the hands they could get, so he was pulling double duty. It was a blessing. Grandmère assured me she was fine. I had a live feed of her on my phone, so I snuck out for the short walk to the village to get some work done. Just needed to take care of something first. I turned back to my hole, barely able to see the ground in front of me, as I grabbed the gardening shovel and started filling it in. I was making the right decision, and thank God he said the awful things he said today, because I was about to break, and I needed the hurt to push through it. I hoped he did replace me. Tonight. He should dance with her and slip his hands inside her clothes and love her crazy, because after that, I wouldn't be able to look back. It would shatter my heart, so there'd be nothing left to hold him with me anymore. Tossing the shovel, I gathered the rest of the dirt with my hands and scooped it into the hole, covering the coffee can and pressing the soil firmly. I took a brand new floorboard and lined it up next to the last one, grabbing the nail gun and securing it to the frame. I moved quickly, all 8 posts rising from their anchors around me as the floor came together, each board cut to my specs. A loud whirring sound ripped through the air, and I looked over again, seeing Damon straddle a motorbike as Winter Ashby stood next to him, fastening a helmet. I tensed, about to wonder what the hell he thought he was doing out here with the kid. But as she climbed on behind him, he looked over his shoulder at her, something written in his smile I'd never seen in him before. Tenderness. She wrapped her arms around his waist, and she squealed as they sped off out of the square, disappearing down a street. I had to smile a little, remembering the pirate ship and how I'd sounded exactly the same last night. I loved that feeling too, Winter Ashby. It wasn't the ride, though, honey. It wasn't the ride. Hours later, the square was empty and quiet, and I headed home for the second time, already having tread the shortcut through people's yards and across streets to look in on my grandmother and collect some more supplies earlier. Sawdust coated my hands, and I stuck them in the pockets of my jean overalls, the wind breezing through the knitting of my sweater. "Up!" someone shouted. I stopped in my tracks, almost to the back door, and set my bag of tools down, looking through the window at the back of the house. Red and blue lights flashed, and I stopped breathing, quickly unlocking the door. Pushing through, I ran across the kitchen, dropping my tool bag on the table and casting a glance up the stairs before racing through the front door instead. My brother stood on the porch in his uniform and thick black jacket, and I stopped, watching paramedics load my grandmother on a gurney up into the back of an ambulance. "Grandmère!" I shouted, racing down the steps. "Grandmère!" They closed the doors, some guy in dark blue pants and a light blue shirt sitting with her in the back. I pounded the doors, but he barely spared a glance before turning back to her. I whipped around, facing Martin. What happened? I had my eyes on her nearly all night. I came home earlier for a few minutes just to see if she needed anything, and she was fine.
Her oxygen levels dropped.
He descended a couple of steps, his hands in the pockets of his coat.
I called the ambulance when I came home for a meal break. Get inside.
No, we need to follow her.
She won't wake up tonight, he told me. And she's in good hands. We'll go in the morning before school.
The engine revved behind me, and I twisted around as the driver shifted into gear. No.
She's fine, Emmy.
I didn't like his tone. Why was he so calm?
Thank you, Janice,
he called out to the driver as she turned off her lights and waved to us.
Tell Ben thank you.
They drove off, and I started after them.
Move another muscle, he warned, and she's never coming back.
I stopped, swallowing the lump in my throat.
Get inside, now,
he ordered. I stood there, hearing his footsteps and the front door swing open, and I shook my head, wanting to run after her, but he'd find me. I closed my eyes, the weariness of all the years and the past several days weighing heavy, because Will showing me how happy I could be if things were a little different made all this so much harder to bear. I was tired. I almost swayed on my feet. I was so tired. A curtain slowly fell between my eyes and my brain as I went through the same rage, anger, hurt, pain, sadness, and despair I'd felt 1,000 times before. But now I understood something I never did. Nothing made sense. Martin, my home, the terror. It just was. And sometimes you were just that person whom things happened to. I walked into the house and closed the door, not tensing or clenching or bracing, because it didn't help.
That was for last night, he said, as I entered the kitchen and watched him take off his jacket. Just a warning.
I blinked once, staring at him. You did that to her. It wasn't a question. I knew the answer. His hand curled around the chair back, and his knuckles turned white as he squeezed. She's the only control you have over me, I told him. If she dies, there's nothing keeping me here.
And without me, she'd be in hospice or some state home, neglected and in agony.
We stood on opposite sides of the table, locked in the challenge. What did he want? Was this really all he had? He acted like he hated me, but would he suddenly be happy if I were no longer here? Was he going to try to stop me when it was time for me to leave?
You ran away from me yesterday,
he said. You were seen at homecoming, and you were seen at the Cove last night.
He steeled his spine, lifting his chin and tightening his lips,
and I know you know what happened to that crypt.
So, he got rid of Grandma for the night to show me how much noise he could make without her here. My jaw ached. I pressed my teeth together so hard. People pushing me, people pulling me, people, people, fucking people. I told him to deal with me. I said I was to blame. I told them all to leave me alone and stop pushing me and pulling me over and over again. No one listens. Blood rushed to my face, something crawling under my skin with its claws. I rubbed my eyes. Take it out on me, I gritted out. Leave her alone.
But that's how I take it out on you, he replied,
a smile playing behind his eyes, laughing at me.
And mark my words, there is still so much more I can do.
I let out a scream, seeing red and too furious to care as the tears filled my eyes. Grabbing the edge of the kitchen table, I shoved it across the floor, the tools in my bag clanking as the table pinned him to the counter. He growled as I crushed his legs, and I reached into the bag, snatching out a hammer as he threw the table on its side, all the tools in the bag crashing to the floor.
You stupid little bitch, he yelled.
I raised the hammer, but he launched out and grabbed my wrist, punching me across the face with the other hand as the tool spilled out of my grasp. Fire spread across my cheek, but I whipped back around and shot up my knee right between his legs, not wasting a second. Stop. Just stop. He buckled, and I shoved both hands into his chest, sending him flying to the floor. Tears blurred my vision, and I spun around, running from the house.
Emery!
His bellow hit my back, and I let out a sob, charging down the porch, across the lawn, and as fast through town as I could race. I hurried past the village, down the road, and deeper into the dark forest, hearing the echo behind me fade more and more as he tried to find me but couldn't.
Emery!
I dove through the trees, the branches whipping my face, and I fixed my glasses as the lights of the town disappeared and sweat covered my back. My legs ached and tears dried on my face as stitches pulled at my side. I slowed to a jog.